Welcome back, PJ Sun Podcast. It's me. I'm Dominic. Still, I'm still PJ Sun. Today, I have my friend and brother, my partner in crime in another podcast that we both do, Mr. Jason Galvin. How you doing, buddy?
What's up? What's up? Doing great.
Thanks for coming over. I know you had a long day today.
Oh man, it was my pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
This is a. I think this is episode 28. I think I talk a little bit too much about benchmarks with my listenership, with all my people. But I do that because, you know, you were with me from the start of this thing. And I'm going to tell that story, folks. Just hang with me. You know, I digress a lot and go off into left field. But I never would have thought, and it's a weird thing, but you know, you never think like, who wants to listen to whatever it is I have to say? You and I have talked about this since I started with you. But as I was just listening, I wanted to tell you guys, we have broken 1,000 downloads. And again, like I've said way too many times and everybody's sick of hearing it, I know that in the big picture of podcasts, that's not some huge thing. But dude, to me, in my little basement, you know, I guess it's a studio. I think that's a huge deal, man.
Absolutely is a big deal.
And I'm pumped on it. And I tell these guys thank you. I try to say thank you every episode, but this one's a little bit different, man. I really do appreciate you guys. And I don't care if you're downloading it and not even listening to it. I just appreciate you doing that for me. So everybody listening, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Jason came down and I've got some new stuff ordered. Video will be starting soon. I have to get a new computer. You know, when you do, if anybody listening hasn't really looked into the YouTube channel, check it out for me. You can look up Dominic Masters or at PJ Sun on YouTube. I have started vlogging a little bit, and it's more like just another creative thing. So what you're going to see is me shooting video through my phone. So all I have there is the audio from my phone. Well, in that little box right there, I just ordered some little lapel speakers, you know? So now I plug this little receiver into the back of my phone. I give you a speaker. It's got a magnetic front and back on it. So you just clip it to your shirt.
Okay.
And then we're both audio, like good audio.
So you can really do it anywhere you're at.
You can go wherever. I got this thing coming. They call it a gimbal. Do you know what a gimbal is? You probably do.
I do not.
Okay.
Give me the down low.
So a gimbal, instead, it's a selfie stick essentially, but you can get some that have like self-tracking. So if you ever see those dudes filming and it's...
I do know what you're talking about now. Yes.
Right. And it's so like you could run.
And which, it's on a gyro, so it keeps it stable.
Yeah. So like I can go out to whatever, what the fuck's it called? Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't be bouncy and shit like you're trying to hold a phone.
Right.
So I got one of those coming. Got speakers coming, and these speakers have those little cattails, like those little muffle things on them to keep wind down. I was doing some sound checking stuff today, and it says it's 100 feet, right? So when I'm shooting my little vlog stuff, I can kind of set the camera on a tripod down there a little ways down the trail. You know what I mean? It just kind of come up with some stuff. Did you happen to see the last video I did?
Is it the one you sent me or a different one?
A different one.
No, I have not.
That one was a short. You got the one with all the guys, the 2-1 guys, right?
Yeah.
So I was taking my oldest daughter to cheer practice last night. Have you ever been to cheer practice?
Only in high school watching my friends.
You're not missing much. Cheer practice, and this is at, well, I don't want to say the place, but it's a big place, and like the culture of cheer moms is a little much for me. So I tend to, there's a place across the street, a big parking lot. I can just park in. Chevelle knows. I like to stay there because of her epilepsy thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I even told you that she's got epilepsy. It just kind of, she had a couple seizures. So, one of us usually stays there. Well, Cash is up at the high school training lacrosse. She's in nice. Prep. I mean, it's all over the place. But so I like to stay there. However, being in the building, if like the place for parents is small and it's just cheer mom heaven, woohoo. So I kind of hang out in this parking lot across the street. So yesterday when I took her, I've just been getting into this, that thing I sent you. I've just been getting into like cutting and editing. And I don't know. I think it's fun. It's interesting. You showed me how to do some audio and I did very little of it. Cause I'm like, I hate to use the word scared or intimidated by technology, because what are we talking about? We're talking about like a mouse and a keyboard and a screen, right? But to a dude that's not like quote unquote tech savvy.
Well, it's kind of like driving a stick, right?
Right.
If you've never driven a stick, you're probably like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do here. You just got to get in the truck or the car and do it.
Yeah.
So that's what it's about, is just doing it. I had to teach myself.
And you've always told me that. You're like, dude, you're just not good at it yet. And,
right.
And that's some shit I tell my kids, so I should know it about myself.
Yeah.
So I had an idea, like a rough idea yesterday of something I just kind of wanted to do about, you know, how life can be tough. And I think in my head, I wanted to call it sometimes. Sometimes life can kick you in the balls. Or I actually said the nuts, and I pointed to the lug nuts on my truck. So it's just me in a parking lot with my truck. There happened to be a Johnny on the spot. There happened to be a construction, like, box. It was a hooker construction, so I made a funny thing. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a hooker that can hurt you. And then I went into Johnny on the spot and did it. Or a dude, whatever, you know. Uh-huh. And so, it was just me in a parking lot with my truck and a camera, or, you know, a phone, and just trying to create this thing. And it's weird how you get, I don't know, there was 38 minutes, I think, of footage total. And so when I chop it down, and I tried to, it was supposed to be funny and then kind of meaningful too, because when Chevelle came out of practice, we ran towards the camera together and she like slipped and fell. And then I said something about, you know, and then you stop and think, and then you remember why it's all worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Life can kick in the ball sometimes and you got to fucking get back up, because these dudes, they depend on us. So it was supposed to be kind of meaningful / funny and goofy. And then just like my first little short film that I've ever done. And I crawled underneath the truck to get one shot. I'm just like in this parking lot. I laid out in the field by myself and like had my tripod set up, and these other parents are like, what in the fuck is he doing? You know? But it was just, it was a lot of fun to do. So messing around with the editing process just on a phone, there's like so much you can do. And then mm-hmm. if you just check out YouTube, dude, it's fucking, there's a video on how to use CapCut. CapCut are the people that made, what's the one, not Instagram, what's the other one? TikTok.
Okay.
So it's from the people who made TikTok. So there's a free version you can get on your phone, and then obviously you can pay for the pro, which I plan on doing when I get a new computer, but that's a whole nother thing. So yeah, I'm like trying to work out lighting but again, dude, there's so much, there's information on all of it.
And creativity, man, you use a different part of your brain for that.
Yeah.
And it's really good to exercise that muscle.
Yeah.
And it gives you a little bit more, what is that? What am I looking to say? That creativity outlet gives you a little bit more life per se. You
absolutely.
Know what I mean? You're not just thinking about the job or thinking about the bills, or, I mean, that creativity is an outlet for emotion, for thought, all kinds of different creative outlet pieces.
Well, and that's what this thing has always been. And you see, we're kind of in my gym now. My listeners know that my gym is / my studio. I feel like I get my physical in, but I don't read a lot, which, you know, I'm sure I should, but like and then work is this kind of like Groundhog Day thing where, you know, and then so, yeah, I needed to get a creative like endeavor to happen. That's the way I say it, is endeavor, just to sound smarter, but.
And men are internal mostly anyway. And so getting that creativity out, extended out, you know, will help our mental health.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the times, I don't know about you, but a lot of times I'll push down emotion just to get through the day or get through whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
But letting that creativity come out, letting your emotion come out, and however it comes out, like your video or your podcast, I mean, that's a good way to cleanse yourself of those things that are deep down.
I don't know if I told this story on here or not. You're talking about expressing yourself. I was down here working out the other night, and my mom always called me her simple man. I have a tattoo on my leg that says Mama Simple Man. So naturally Simple Man, and then my mom dying, like Simple Man, just when I hear it, I skip it because I know where this is about to go. So I'm down here the other night. Kids were gone on spring break. They were with their mom this year. I'm down here. I'm training for a Tough Mudder coming up at the end of the month. So I'm like stepping up training a little bit, and just so I was doing my second one that day. And just down here, like really into it and just getting it. Leashing the dog upstairs. Simple Man comes on. Now, it was Shinedown's version, which I do like as well. It's not Skinner, but, you know. And for some reason, I think I needed it. I think I've been a little stressed. I know I've been a little stressed lately. And so I let it play, dude. And I was like, I mean, I just broke. And fucking, and like, I have always had, well, not always, but in my later years, especially with kids, had zero problem with crying about my kids and being happy, and I, it just fucking feels good. I was over there, I was kind of just walking it off a little bit, and then just like put my hands on my knees and just wailed, dude. And then I'm down here for a minute, and I kind of like get my shit together. I'm like, all right, man, it's cool to be sad about your mom, no big deal, you know. And then I go upstairs and I go, hey, man, and she's on the couch watching TV with the dog. They both look up at me like, what the fuck do you want? I go, neither of you two came down to, like, you know, support me or anything. And Alicia's like, babe, what are you talking about? You're down there screaming like an animal lifting weights. I'm like, yeah, well, Simple Man came on and I fucking cried because I missed my mom and you needed me to come down. And she's like, babe, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry, you know. But I mean, I fucking let it loose, dude. I'm all right with that. Sometimes I absolutely need it, you know, it felt good.
It's just emotion coming out in a different way, man.
Yeah, yeah, but
there's nothing wrong with crying at all.
No. Do you know a guy named Cody Alford?
I do not. Not off the top of my head.
Marine Raider, sniper, overall bad motherfucker, got shot in the head and shit. He came in after I left, but he was with 2-1 in Fallujah. He was with all my guys. So, I met him at the last reunion we went to. He's huge on YouTube and does a lot of like self-help stuff. And, you know, he's really trying to help people. And, so he came to the reunion and obviously, I've been into this thing for a little while. Well, here's a person who hasn't figured it out, but he's doing it and succeeding at it, right? If I wanted to know what it's like to work at a bank, I come talk to you. If I want to know, you know what I mean? Like, so you find quote unquote experts or people that are good in their field, and you get close and just pick their brain, because I think people generally want to help. Like, most people want to pass their knowledge down if you are willing to kind of receive it in their way. Meaning, like, my guy at work, all the guys at work that have taught me how to weld, I know that they kind of help me a little more because of my reception to the information, right? So if you're going to be a fucking pain in the ass and shit, like, never mind. But, like, if you're open and you listen and you're able to take critique and all that stuff. So we all went out to this bar. And he was standing there, and like for once in the weekend, nobody was just around him because everybody knows the dude, you know, and he did some cool shit over there, and he's bros with all the bros. So everybody wanted to talk to him, and now he's like, whatever, famous. So, but he was just kind of hanging, standing there for a minute. And I said, hey, Cody, you know, I introduced myself. I wasn't there with you guys on that one, but I went. You got any advice about the YouTube stuff? You know, I do a podcast now. I co-host another one. I'm trying to get into video, and like, I'm really kind of liking it's a creative thing. We went into all that shit, and he was like, bro, why haven't you just done it yet? I'm like, well, you know, it is a financial thing sometimes with a whole family and stuff, you know. But other than that, man, you know, I don't know what to do. You know what I mean? And I said, and he like looks stupid. He goes, there it is. I said, what? He was like, obviously you haven't watched all of my stuff, because we had talked about it for a minute. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, dude, I sat down with a phone. His first video was the day before he got out of the Marine Corps. And he introed himself and just kind of like, you know, I'm about to get out. I have no idea what I'm going to do type of thing, but I'm going to film it and take you for a ride with me. And like, that was his first. He goes, dude, I go back and look at some of my stuff and like, it's ridiculous. Like, who cares about it? But he's like, I don't really give a fuck if people don't like it.
You're doing it for you.
Yeah. He's doing it for him, right?
For him, yep.
You know, and so I think there is that thing because, like, some of the videos with Echo, a couple have gotten, like, 12,000 views. People just love dogs just as much as I do. Alicia follow, like, most of the people she follows are fucking Doberman people. Mm-hmm. It's because it's cool. Dogs are great. Everybody loves, most people love dogs, you know? But I do find myself, I think it's two things. I think I'm interested. I'm talking this whole time. You need to jump in here.
Oh, hey, man, you go.
I think it's two things. I am interested in, so there are times when downloading or uploading videos when they hit harder, right? So if you do it like 2 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, that's not going to get pushed out until here.
Right.
When you have 120 subscribers like I do, the algorithm's not picking you up because there are a lot of people that have that kind of
Because they got to get their ads in. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So they're gonna you got to be strategic on when you throw that out there so that those ad pushes. What I learned, what I was telling you about earlier, I won't say it on here, but the place I went.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Those ads get pushed out wherever you are at in the nation. You and I could be listening to the same exact thing, watching the same exact YouTube video. You and I could pull up the same YouTube video right now, and any ad that comes on, our ads are going to be different, right? So if your audience is mainly where you live, right, and in the same, they have the same likes, they do the same things.
Generally, yeah.
Generally, it might be similar. But you and I might be completely different in our what we like to do. I'm heavy into different things maybe than you are. Well, those ads are going to be directed towards my personality. The phone that you carry around is an algorithm device.
Absolutely.
It tracks where you've been, what you looked at, what you've done, and all those ads are driven. You and I could be watching the same Hulu movie or the show or whatever, and you're going to get a different ad. We could be watching it simultaneously on our phones, and you're going to get a different ad than I am.
Hmm. Because we're different. Go ahead.
Yep. So my point is whatever, wherever the person is and whatever their likes or dislikes are, that algorithm is going to push those ads out, right? Yeah. But also whatever platform it is, let's say YouTube, they know when to maximize those specific ads, right?
Course.
So if you throw it in at 1 o'clock in the morning, it may not get pushed to the front like some other stuff during prime time areas. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, and so YouTube, if you go onto your page, if you have a page, you can see all of the analytics. Like they do sell. So you're right. They told me all that stuff, right? So that stuff does interest me. And I know from all the therapy and stuff I've done, it's like my dad not telling me he loved me enough. So I do seek validation. I weirdly seek male validation, and I don't think it's all that weird, but if I'm doing something and there is someone that I respect on the other end of it, it feels good to, hey, you did a good job.
Right.
Right. I don't think maybe it is weird. Maybe I don't know. But so
I'm in the same boat as you, man.
You know, right. So there is that. But I got to tell you, man, okay, just because obviously I looked and my expectations are very high for myself. If it's not, what the fuck? I should have a million. Come on, dude, you got to be realistic, right? So I keep telling myself that. And then, so that one I did last night, I cut it up and and I show the kids. The kids are all kind of a part of it. And they're all like, Dad, like, it's really like creative and good, you know? And I'm like, awesome, you know? Like, all right. So to me, what I was honestly thinking was, regardless of what the rest of the world thinks, I'm like happy with this stupid little thing that it's very insignificant, but I had a lot of fun making it. I had fun shooting it. I learned some weird different things about my phone and doing cinematic instead of just video and 4K and da da da. That I'm happy with it. And so while it's not getting a whole bunch of traction or whatever that even means, I really do feel fulfilled and like it's definitely something I want to do in my spare time, of course, whatever that means. But it's like, but it is something that I need to work on. Like, oh God, nobody likes it. Well, yeah, but do you, you know?
And I've heard people that I respect tell me, well, at least one person that I've worked with or for is, don't let great get in the way of good.
Right.
Right. And I think that perfection notion, I've always tried to dissect why do I view myself as a perfectionist, similar to what you just said.
Yeah.
Right? And the thing that I can go back to is first of all, that validation, like you mentioned, and also in my dad's world, and that's who I was trying to please most of the time.
Of course.
Perfection was there because if you weren't perfect, someone got hurt or died.
Right. And
Although that's subconscious now in other parts of your world.
Okay.
What's up, Echo?
Oh, I don't want you to knock that over, Echo. Come here, baby. Come here. All right, relax. No, you're absolutely right. And while I know that and that played a role in my life too, if the kids' beds aren't made, blah, 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 I know it's not. Like, but it's a hard habit to break. Mm-hmm. It really is. So I don't know. It's just kind of funky. But anyway, the point is, if you wanted to, I don't, you know, go like my video.
I need to take a look at the videos.
Not you, but I mean people. But
no,
yeah,
no,
you too,
I do too. But yeah, yeah. I wanna follow it, man. I think anytime you have friends, well, that's a bad way to say it. Everybody's got friends, but or they should. But anytime your friends are doing something that's important to them, you should support it.
Absolutely. There is a guy Alicia has been friends with. His name's Mike Mason. He like. One of the OG freestyle motocross guys. If you know freestyle motocross, you know who Mike Mason is. Well, when Alicia worked on, when she went around, she used to tour with Do Tour and X Games. And so she has been around freestyle moto. Nuclear Cowboys was another big one. So she, like all those top dudes in freestyle motocross, she knows very well. She was kind of like, she called it their tour mom. So when they would get to a city, I'm butchering this, but like when they would get to a city, she would go on a huge grocery run, and then Home Depot, if they needed a box of screws to build the ramps, da da da, and then she would do all of the whatever production stuff. And I mean, she did all kinds of stuff throughout all of her years working with him. She knows Mace's family. I'll call him Mace. She knows his family really well and goes out there and hangs with them. His parents are good friends of hers. He and another guy, Jorge Alvarez. Jorge is a photographer, videographer. They do a podcast called Hanging with the Boys. And so Jorge, I called him just because of his background and all kinds of stuff. I talked to him before I got all this stuff, just looking for kind of advice. You know, you want to talk to a bunch of different people. I lost my train of thought there. Anyway, so they do a podcast, and I just talked to Jorge again today. He was giving me some advice on just some software type stuff, you know, but surrounding yourself with people who know things, I don't know. It just always seems to be helpful. So I'm just going to keep cruising and, you know, see what happens.
Well, yeah, you take the best of what everybody can provide for you. You take the meat and throw out the bones, and
yeah.
You make it your own.
Yeah.
You know? We're just all on a journey learning, right? And
for
having
sure.
A good time. And as long as you're having fun, as long as it's meaningful to you, that's the most important
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, creative outlet, man, you get to show people who you are and open up. And I think that's really, really important. And then,
yeah.
You know, what we all put out there is out there. And so now you got a legacy, man.
It's just,
you know,
yeah. Keep rolling.
Yep.
Speaking of like time, let's talk about how you and I met.
All right.
So, I've told you guys the story about the museum. It's officially changed the name now.
Yeah.
It is officially the
Mid-America Veterans Museum.
Veterans Museum.
Yep. 410 East Elm Street.
Yeah.
O'Fallon, Missouri.
And
currently
and it was the St. Charles County Veterans Museum. You can look them up on Facebook and stuff. So quick, if you are a new listener, we have a little Veterans Museum in town, and all my stuff was here in the basement. Alicia and I and the kids went up there just to check it out one time. She saw it in a, I don't know where she saw it, newsletter or something. We went up there to check it out, and she read something about everything was up there on donation, all the exhibits. And she said, you know, your stuff just kind of sitting in the basement. What would you think about that? Felt kind of weird about it at first, called some of the guys. In the Marine Corps, your dress blues are your, I mean, it's probably my most valuable possession as far as material things go. I just, other things you can replace. I could go get a new set of dress blues, but those ones were given to me. I bought them at the end of boot camp. Like that, they've been with me since 2001. So I called some of the guys and they're like, dude, if, you know, because I always just figured I would get buried in my dress blues. I think most Marines probably would. But then I kind of leaned into the cremation thing just because, like, whatever, you know. I don't think I'm going to care all that
dust
much.
Dust to dust, man.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to care all that much when
you
I'm
won't
dead.
Be around, no. Man.
You know, as a matter of fact, you could do me one of those things where they grind you up and put you in a tree. Like, it, you get it.
I know what you're talking about,
and then
man.
They bury you, and you mm-hmm. hopefully sprout up as a tree. Mine will get bulldozed over, but whatever. I tried. So that was kind of always the idea, and that's what my buddies told me. They're like, dude, if you get buried in them, no one's ever going to see them again. If you donate them to this museum, what if your grandkids went up? And that just got me, right? So mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, fuck. So met up with, what was Jim's title?
Jim was the director. Executive director at that time, I believe.
Yeah. So I was talking to... Jim Higgins is his name, and brought all my stuff up there. We inventoried it, and they built this amazing little display. And it's not like, again, dude, just like being on YouTube or on a podcast, it's weird to walk into.
It's unreal, right?
Yeah. To walk into a place with all this history and, you know, like the World War
Where have those things been?
Right,
man?
Dude. The stories.
What if those things could tell the story themselves? They
yeah,
could.
Yeah.
It's nuts, man.
Yeah. It's not as impactful reading them from a binder. It's still super impactful, but like, it's wild.
You read the binder, right? I mean, cause you gotta see the story or read the story.
Yeah.
But while you're reading the story, seeing that, cause it's really not about the artifacts themselves. It really is about the story.
Of course.
But it's like an enhancement, right? It's like you, I don't know the necessary touch it, but you know, in essence, touch, feel, see. And
sure.
Hear the story. I mean, it just brings it to life even
yeah.
more.
Yeah.
You know, and then I don't want to steal your thunder, but then hearing the stories come directly from the person.
Right.
Who donated the stuff that was at the place, who did the thing, who wore the thing, is just incredible, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So I donated my stuff up there, and then the family and I went up to where I met Jason. The family and I went up to 4th of July. We actually have a really cool parade here in town. And the kids and I don't know if the kids weren't with me on the first one, but Alicia and I ran around and passed out little flags, little American flags to all the kids. It's basically a 2-mile run because you got to just go back and forth, but we were so stoked to do it. And then I started talking to you and Jim about doing the podcast. I do my first one and just fell in love with the process. It's something that I consume mostly podcasts. I listen to music when I'm working out and sometimes on the way to work, but that's about it. It's usually podcasts. So I was stoked to be able to do that. And then, I just got lucky, and Jim, the director, is, you know, he's retired. This is all volunteer stuff. And he's just kind of wanting to settle down and enjoy, he and his wife, a little bit of retirement. And they have put so much work into this museum, and they continue to do so. And so he asked if I'd be interested in kind of co-hosting with you, which I was just so pumped to have an opportunity like that. Yeah. And that's kind of where you and I met and just been kicking ass ever since, really.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I enjoy most about it is the camaraderie.
Yeah.
And helping others express themselves and recording that for history. Right. I mean, recently, we lost a World War II vet that was very dear to the museum, and I had the distinct pleasure of interviewing him twice. You know, and
he's,
I mean,
awesome.
The second time was just as good as the first time, even though it was pretty much the same.
Yeah,
information. It was a little slightly different, but man, we'll never get that person back. They're gone now, but that story is there forever.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, just interacting with that's just one story.
Yeah.
You know, Battle of the Chosin Reservoir, Korean War.
Well, he was a, what, B-17?
He was, but I'm just talking about... In general. Yeah. I mean, another guy, a Vietnam veteran dog handler. Who's going to be able to interview that guy, right?
That's it.
2 years ago, I would have never thought about it.
Yeah.
Not, it wouldn't even have crossed my mind.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, the dog handler story, one of my faves, man. Top three.
It's so crazy.
You know, like, but... And your story, man. Well, you know, I love hearing your story and your guys, man.
Yeah. They're amazing.
You just can't, if these stories don't get told and recorded, they're gone forever.
Yeah.
So yeah. We got to talk about, and that's why that's why it's really important to me. Not being a veteran, but being a patriot and being a Gold Star family member, which it's very, very, very important to
me. Yeah. It's a big deal to keep it moving. Have you watched any of that Masters of the Air on Apple TV?
I haven't, but I probably need to.
Dude, it's the dude from Elvis, the dude that did Elvis, Austin something.
Yeah.
He's kind of just always going to be Elvis if you ever watch that movie.
Yeah.
It's hard for him to get away from that thing.
Yeah.
I saw a shooting video of his. He was at Terran Tactical, and he still was kind of like, oh. You know, so he's like,
yeah, he's still got the demeanor.
He's
and
fucking
the
Elvis. It was a perfect role for him when he did Elvis because he's like, it's kind of his role. But it was about those guys in those B-17s. And I mean, like, Alicia quit watching it, which of course meant I quit watching it. But every mission they went on, dude.
Well, think about this too, man. If you think about it, I can't quantify this because I don't know the data on it. But it wasn't uncommon in World War, I don't know about one, but definitely in World War II, for there to be a person extremely underage that wanted to fight, wanted to go to war, and either exaggerated their age, got a parent to sign off on it. So you got these young kids fighting our war, right? 16, 17 sometimes, even younger. And then you got them stuck in a bubble, in a plane.
A massive plane
stuck in a bubble getting shot at and shooting back. And talk about being terrified, man.
Yeah.
They didn't come home very often.
No.
They?
They had a thing in the movie, and I'm going to fuck this up, but it was like 13. If you made 13, or 25 was another number for some reason. This was a while ago in my memory shit, but I think like 13 was the first kind of, you made it home from that many. And even in the movie, but it was Tom Hanks and Spielberg that did it. So when they have done projects about war stuff, like obviously money's not the issue. So they go like as hard as they can
on
keeping things just as accurate as possible. So they're flying over there and the nav guy's getting his stuff and the bombardier's getting his sights set up and the gunner's got their rounds loaded and everything's kind of calm for whatever, an hour. And then it's just...
All hell breaks loose.
Boom, boom, boom. You start seeing the flak. Well, there's fucking 30 fucking planes out there. However, there's just huge targets. And with those anti-aircraft guns they were using, like I'm thinking if I'm the Germans, just lead them, you know?
Yep.
I mean, they're just...
When sitting ducks almost.
Yeah, when they're that high. I mean, I don't think they're speedy planes at all. You just fucking lead them and you're going to... Every time they went out, the bob up, I mean, they were just getting hammered, dude. And Alicia's just like, I don't know how people can do this. I'm like, I hope you're not expecting me to be able to empathize or sympathize with these dudes, because I have, that's so far out of my life or experience in any way, shape, or form. I mean, just total fucking nightmare coming home from that. And then Bud was like the happiest dude, and he was always cracking. Of course, when he was around and we were doing 4th of July Day parades, I'm sure he's had his own stuff. But yeah, man, I like when people have gone through stuff like that, it's just, that's another level of like badassery, you know?
Yep. Yep.
Those dudes need to be talked about and remembered and everything else. And I say this probably too much as well, but I have the honor and privilege of knowing guys like that.
Yeah.
You know? And like,
isn't that incredible?
Oh, dude. And when you see him, if I fuck with some of them because I know how uncomfortable it makes him. My bro Gomez, he like got his shoulder blown off, got shot in the face, and he's just like, he's one of my heroes in life, but he's also like my best bud. And so I always give him shit, especially if people are around. I'm like, you guys ever met a war hero? Just fucking with him, you know? But I've never heard of or talked to a dude that's been like, yep, that's me. All those dudes are like, dude, I fucking shut up. If you want to know what a war hero is, I'll send you to this guy. Yep. And then that guy sends you to that guy. And it's an internal thing. We obviously would never talk like that in front of regular people. It's something we do to fuck with each other. But when you know people like that, it's a weird thing because I know what Gomez is capable of, but there's that fine line where are you going to actually do it or not? And I can't say, you know, I wasn't there. I have no dog in that fight, but that motherfucker was, and he did. And and so it's just always fun to poke at him a little bit.
Most of us don't think we can do something until the time arises where we need to do it, where we're faced with it. And that's where the real courage comes, you know?
Yeah.
And these guys, like you, they've trained and trained and trained. And it's that muscle memory. And a lot of them, even talking about my dad, I mean, I asked my dad a few days before he died, are you scared? And I was, you know, 11-year-old kid. Of course I'm scared. You know, and I'm talking to a 33-year-old.
Motherfucker.
Bad motherfucker. Yeah. And courage is doing it when you're scared.
Of course.
You know, and you doing it
really,
for others.
And you can't really train that either.
No. You can train the operation. You can train the mechanics of it. You can train, how to operate something.
Response.
But man, when the rubber hits the road, man, you just do it.
Yeah. And to know people that have and would again. I tell this story. I don't know if I've ever told you though. Gomez is driving across the country. His son goes to school in Illinois. He's driving across the country to bring his son here. On his way back, of course, he stops by here. We've known his whole family. I was there when his son was like born, and now he comes and stays at my house and stuff when he's at school if he, you know, can't get home. Gomez is driving out here to drop him off. Driving back home, he stops by, stays the night one night. We just, you know, take him out to dinner. We all just hang and let him get a shower and rest before he's got to go back to Southern California. And another brother of ours wasn't answering the phone. And some people had been kind of concerned. Well, come to find out, because I don't want to throw Macaulay out there like that, he just wanted to like unplug. He was doing the right thing that I want to do so often. He was just unplugging it. I don't want to be on my fucking phone. I'm busy. Well, Gomez wasn't having that. So Macaulay lives in Tucson, Arizona. Now, geographically, that's not, I mean, it's closer to San Diego than we are, but Gomez hung a right somewhere and went 8 hours out of his way, pulls up in the driveway. Macaulay's on his fucking roof, fixing something on his roof, regular day. You know, Gomez, what? And he's very broken English and shit. As a matter of fact, you should probably check out that podcast.
I will.
He talks about how he came over here illegally as a kid and all this other stuff. Still very broken English. You motherfucker, I've been trying to get a hold of you. And Macaulay's like, dude, sorry. I'm just like not wanting to be on my phone. And Gomez's like, all right, I love you. I got to go. Gets back in his car and drives. I mean, that's the type of shit we're talking about, man.
Yeah.
And these people they just are that way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fascinating to know them. So that's where you and I, that's our little origin story. I thank you still for teaching me everything you've taught me and getting this whole thing going. And I've just had a blast. I wish we could just do it full time and, you know, enough with this.
That'd be awesome.
Enough with
it?
This work and stuff. But the talks are at the new museum. We might have us a little studio set up. So
man, that would be sweet.
We're going to try anyways.
All we need is a little room, man.
All we need is a little room and a lot of money.
A lot of money. So if people out there got money.
If you got any money.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
If you got any money, buck up.
Yeah.
Another thing that I had to learn about you, excuse me, I didn't quite know, and you just mentioned, is that you are a Gold Star family member.
Yep.
For folks who don't know, and there's probably a few, what is a Gold Star family member?
A Gold Star family member is a survivor of somebody who was killed in action.
Okay. Who was that in your life?
That was my dad.
Okay, so everybody listening, I did know that because I have come to find out that I'm trying to get into this story. It's a tough one, but Jay is going to tell us. So if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to shut up and let's talk about a real hero.
Sure.
This one means a lot to me also, and you'll find out why.
I think it's important if we're going to talk about it to kind of start from the beginning.
Please, you got it.
So you mentioned Gomez and how he came over and stuff like that, where my grandpa, my dad's dad, came over on the belly of a train from Mexico at 15 years old. He was kicked out of his house at 15. They said, hey, we can't feed you anymore. We got too many mouths to feed. You're gone.
When was this?
50s.
50s?
Mm-hmm.
He's got into a belly of a train and took a ride.
Just hung on. If you picture a train.
Sure.
The underneath and you just hold on. He just held on across the border.
What a monster, dude.
Yeah, went over to California, didn't speak any English. He was a gardener by trade.
Wow.
Did a whole bunch of work in Southern California on the freeways of California to beautify that. Had his own gardening company.
Really?
Yep. And so my dad was the firstborn. My grandpa, my grandma, both Mexican. My grandma's Mexican Indian. My grandpa was Mexican. I met my grandpa a couple times. Still never spoke English around me, so... you know that. But my dad grew up in a single parent home. My grandparents got divorced. My grandpa was a pretty abusive guy. My dad had to be kind of the hero in the family and protect grandma and all that kind of stuff. Just when you know, there's no excuses for domestic violence, but you know what you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And back then it was just continual cycle of abuse, you know?
Yeah.
My dad's got, three brothers and a sister. There was five of them, and two of the brothers were twins, another brother, and then a sister. And so he grew up in Southern California in Orange County. He went to Estancia High School. He was a quarterback in high school, very athletic, and also one cool fact about my dad is that and now I know kind of why he was on me the way he was, is he went to summer school every year even though he didn't need to go. His mom made him go so he could get better and better, you know, and that was a really good thing in his life. He was an Eagle Scout, and his dream was to be in the military. So right after high school, I think it was 1977, he went into the Air Force as an enlisted airman, A1C, Airman First Class, and he was on the combat control team at Hurlburt Field Air Force Base, Florida.
What's a combat control team?
Combat control is it's controlling in the field, directing aircrafts, and also special operations.
Okay.
So combat control. Think of combat control as the Air Force version. Let's just say the Air Force version of the SEALs or
okay,
something of that nature. Ranger. Something.
Are they ground guys?
Ground guys. Yeah.
So
I mean, they're jump masters, but yeah,
I think we call a lot of those. I don't know. Hell,
and I'm not an expert at combat
observers, right? Kind of, you know,
and I'm not an expert at combat control, but they're tough motherfuckers.
Yeah, you know, of course. I mean? Yeah,
but he had bigger aspirations. He always was trying to make himself better. So I was born in '79. He got out of the Air Force temporarily to go get his commission. So he went to Troy State University in Alabama. Was ROTC Corps Commander while he was in school. Got his commission when he graduated.
You can just say stud.
Yeah, he was a stud.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yep. So he got out, became an officer with his commission.
Wow.
So he knew both sides of the coin and very respected in that vein.
Absolutely. Mustangs are a big deal, man.
And then he wanted to fly. Didn't have great eyes. So at that point, he couldn't be a pilot. But he definitely wanted to be in planes. And so he went to NAV school in California, a base that's now closed. Became a trained navigator from there.
What base was that? Sorry, up north. I'm going to ask you.
That's
a lot
Northern
of questions.
California, and I'm trying to remember the name of the base. I was only a couple years old
all
at
right.
that point.
I just,
but it's closed now.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I got to do some training at a base up there.
Mather.
I don't.
It might be like I think it's Mather. If I'm correct, I might not be remembering that correctly. But anyway, it's early '80s, right? Then we moved to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Arizona. He was part of the 41st ECS, which was He was a navigator on that plane.
Okay.
That was, I'm not 100% sure what that plane did. I think it was electronic warfare or some sort.
In the 80s, we were already doing this shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then he got stationed again back at Hurlburt in 1986 on the AC-130 gunship. He transitioned from navigator to fire control officer.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
I need you to clarify this. So,
sure.
Folks at home, you have seen a C-130.
Correct.
A C-130, I forgot the statistic. We got to fly on one. Apparently, like a Boeing 747 can fit under the wing. I mean, these things are fucking monsters. They're beasts. Well, there are some of them that you can, you've seen in movies. They've got tanks and vehicles, and they can load up helicopters. I mean, some of them are for carrying things, troops, vehicles, equipment. You see those high performance tier one dudes jump out of them with side by sides, Bajas and shit, and then everybody's skydiving and it looks awesome. And then there is the AC-130
mm-hmm.
that Jason's talking about, which if you Google or YouTube, it's a gunship. It yep. is close air support. It's the best plane ever, as far as I'm concerned, as far as air support goes. So
armed reconnaissance.
Yeah. So check out C-130s, and I'm just trying to help you paint a picture at home so you can visualize what his dad did.
Yeah. So in the plane, there's 14 crew members for this plane, which consisted of back then, and the plane has evolved over time. The first modified C-130, I would call it that, that was armed, was in Vietnam. Okay, you puff the Magic Dragon, things like that. They would go down the Ho Chi Minh Trail and do those kind of exercises there, okay? Well, they fought in Panama. They fought in Desert Storm. They fought in every war since then, right? So they were almost eliminated one time, but at this point, this model was an H model, an AC-130 armed reconnaissance plane. And what that did is basically close air support for troops on the ground.
Yeah.
And the ramp up, if anybody can remember Desert Shield and the Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. So my dad wasn't over there for the full time, but his part was called fire control officer, which sat next to the navigator in the plane. Excuse me. And so there was a pilot, a co-pilot, a flight engineer that sat between the two, the pilot and co-pilot. There was a sensor operator that was to the left of the pilot and down a little bit. And then on the right-hand side where the co-pilot was, to the right of them was the navigator desk and the fire control officer. So really it was just, to my understanding, the fire control officer controlled the fire, right? And released the weapons at the command of the pilot.
Right.
Once they had whatever they were going to shoot in order, right? And then you have gunners in the back and you have TV operators. Back then, you had a guy laying in a bubble doing some observation, things of that
nature.
Well,
there's a lot to think about because you said the words close air support. So you're talking distance, the speed of the plane, where the guys are, where friendlies are, where combatants are. That's pretty fucking important. You know, what's that one gun on there? 30, 20?
Well, they got a 105.
Yeah.
Back then, they had a 40. The Gatlin guns, I believe it was Gatlin guns, a 20. A 40 and a 105.
So, I mean, you can't just be sending those things downrange not knowing where they're at. Again, close air support. We only can call those dudes when it's bad, you know.
And then you think of air traffic control and combat control.
Right.
That you have air traffic control, you know, monitoring, you know, landing and taking off, combat control, monitoring, close air support.
Right. And with another plane.
Right.
And you got to be talking to those guys, too. And then the helos that are down there and the guys on the ground. So, I mean, it's a whole symphony of...
And then you got an AWACS above all that, monitoring everything, you know?
Right.
So, but anyway, so these guys were during that period of time. My dad left. I think the last time I saw my dad was January 2nd of 1991.
Okay.
So... Man, I have some precious pictures. I go off a little rabbit trails here, but I have some precious
Please
pictures
do.
of our last Christmas together. It was kind of, my dad was a hard ass.
Yeah.
I mean, everything was militaristic, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, I mean, I grew up in a very tight surrounding. But anyway, so the cool thing about that last Christmas is, man, we used to do this thing called camping out in the living room. I don't know if you've ever done that before.
Sure.
Throwing a pallet down. And
of course.
Shit. And I remember watching It's a Wonderful Life with my dad in the living room, and then we waited till like midnight and opened our present. We got great pictures of it.
Nice.
So, but, you know, right after that was the last time I saw my dad. I remember driving my dad. Well, I didn't drive him. My mom did. We had an Astro van at that time, and took my dad on base to the squadron. I think it was the squadron, and they had all of the pallets out there to put the A-bags and stuff on and put the cargo nets on. I just remember, I can picture the cargo nets over the A-bags and all that, and not wanting to let my dad go, which wasn't a normal thing, because I used to love when my dad got on TDY. Because me and my mom could get away with a lot of shit that we couldn't get away with while he was there.
Of course.
You know, because my dad was pretty tight with money and we did everything by the book and white glove and all that. And me and my mom had some more freedom when my dad was gone, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to make it seem like, you know, I was always attached to my dad like this, but it was like, it was different this time.
Dude, my kids do it now. When they know I'm at work, Alicia's home, it's different around here.
Right. So, I mean, precursor to that, I remember being in my house one day. This is before cell phones and stuff like that. You had answering machines,
mm-hmm,
with little tapes in there and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember coming home, my dad's bedroom, master bedroom, and maybe they had the recorder in there. Okay. And I remember my dad was in his flight suit. We had come in together. I don't know if he picked me up or whatever, but I was listening to the voicemails. My dad was listening to them, and my grandma was on there bawling her eyes out because my dad was told her earlier, left her message, hey, I'm going to be going to the desert. And my grandma's freaking out, you know, and just, I can remember all those little things.
Naturally, yeah.
And it's weird that I remember all that, because I don't remember anything like that on any other occasion.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
So long story short, bring my dad to the flight line, and they're gone January 2nd. Their crew was killed in action on January 31st. So they were only gone from the United States for 29 days. They weren't even in the country that long over there.
Really?
Yeah. So the air war started in the middle of January.
Mm-hmm.
And talked to my dad one more time by phone. My mom had run across the I was at a neighbor's house. It had been raining really hard that day. And this is back with the handheld phones before.
Of course.
So she ran across the street, and I was at a buddy of mine's house. And she's like, hey, your dad's on the phone. You need to come talk to him. So that's when I was talking to him about being scared. You know, I didn't know what to ask the guy. I'm like, are you scared? What's going on?
Yeah.
And the only other time I'd known him to be at war was when he was in Panama for liberating Panama from cartel, Manuel Noriega.
Noriega, that's it.
But at any rate,
you go across the street to talk to him.
Kind of normal, you know what I mean? Like, no one's thinking that's going to be the last time you talk to somebody.
Nor is he going to really show a bunch of, you know what I mean? You are who you are.
Right. And so I, you know, moving forward to the 31st, and it was odd. My mom, my neighbor across the street, who's still good friends. In fact, my mom just went to go visit my brother in Colorado and met up with this lady. Her name's Jerry Savico, and she was one of my mom's best friends at the time, military family themselves. And they were actually prayer partners. They would pray with each other on this specific day of the week, every week.
Right.
You know, I'd be at school all the time, so I would never see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, for some reason, I mean, it had to be ordained, man, by God or something, but I happened to be sick from school. I was never sick. I wasn't even allowed to be sick.
Yeah, don't do it. That's
military families, you're sick, throw up, and go ahead and throw up, and now you feel better, I can go to school.
Yeah.
All right, but my dad's not there to say that. So I'm home sick, laying on the couch. Jerry knocks on the door, brings her in. I bring her in. Where's your mom? Well, my mom's getting ready in the back. She's in her bedroom getting dressed. She just woke up, you know. We had this big bay window in our front of our house, and Jerry and I are just talking. You know, I'm a kid. She's like my best friend's mom, you know. And so she's like, I don't remember exactly what she said, but it wasn't good. She saw them pull up in the driveway.
There was a vibe.
And she saw him pull up in the driveway, and a couple uniform guys, three uniform guys get out. That's never good.
Dude.
And they knock on the door, right? And she's freaking out because she's a military wife herself. She's freaking out.
Of course.
This isn't good, right?
Of course.
Well, my mom is in the back and hears Jerry getting all emotional and comes out, right? And then my mom starts freaking. I mean, of course, but she lost it, dude. And I'm like, 11 years old, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. You know what I mean?
Well, who are these dudes?
And they don't, at first, I don't know how they do it now, but any type of reading of anything. They don't even, it's not like, hey, Dominic, how you doing? It's like they just start reading this paper.
Really? That's eerie.
Yeah, it's real eerie. And at this point, they're just missing in action. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. So what happened was the night before, I'm going to go back a little bit. The night before, there were three of these planes, these AC-130s that were in a grouping, what's called being on station. Okay. So they all took off at different points of time during the day, or during the night, excuse me. And these planes fly at night because they're big targets. Mm-hmm. And so they're low altitude, close air support, and cover of night is their biggest asset.
Of course.
Okay. And so, to the best of my understanding, and I don't quote me as an expert, this is just a son remembering the details and reading a bunch of stuff that I've read over time. I remember I was 11 when this happened. But first plane takes off. They're on station. Second plane's there, and third plane has to come up later in the night. What they're doing is this detachment, I would say, or however you want to say it, of Marines was stuck, pinned down in the city of Kafji. They're stuck in a building. They got pinned down, and they needed close air support. They couldn't get out. And so Iraqi tank divisions pulling up, you know, and they're just a lot of guys on the ground fighting, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So these one guy's at, you know, one plane further in the night, that bingo, they got to go back because they got no fuel.
Right.
You know what I mean? So daylight's about to break. It's getting almost sunrise. And so
dangerous,
right? Apparently, my dad's crew decided as a crew to stay because these Marines still needed help. And so they made a conscious decision to stay in daylight. And, when they did, unfortunate as it may be, they got hit with a surface to air shoulder rocket.
Yeah.
Okay. The downside is normally anywhere else they would get shot in the plane, they may or may not have a chance to bail out, right? You're lower altitude, you could potentially bail out and you're behind enemy lines or whatever, but you're gonna be safe. Well, these guys unfortunately got hit right in a fuel tank. And lost a wing, went in.
And you know that no good motherfucker that shot that rocket had no clue, you know what I mean? That was just a...
Yeah. Yep. And it's, you know, they got one mayday out of it. From my understanding, it went into an inverted dive. They could not recover because they lost that wing and hit the ocean floor at full speed, about 100 yards off the beach in the city of Kafji. It's the Battle of Kafji, and... they had a hard time finding the plane at first because there's a battle going on.
Yeah.
And so immediately they're starting to search for this missing plane, right? But so that's why they're missing in action, because they can't get to them. They can't find them. And eventually time goes on. I don't remember the timeline, but relatively soon, within at least days, maybe a week or so, they're able to locate the wreckage, but not know whether the wreckage has people in it. You know, still don't know. Did these guys get out? There was only one mayday call. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And at that time, simultaneously, if people are of age to remember this, there was about 13 or 14, maybe 16 prisoners of war that were going to be released, mm-hmm, during this time frame, right? And so we had all of our hopes up about who was, you know, going to be, you know, we're sitting in front of a TV watching this.
Yeah.
Wondering, are these going to be our people? You know what I mean? And it's just devastating again and again. Ultimately, they found the plane. There was nothing left of these guys. Okay, so there were no bodies to get. They were there, but there's no bodies. They're pieces of bodies. There were, let's just put it this way so it can be kind of appropriate here, there was at least one person who... torso was in their flight suit, but that's about it.
Wow.
Lifting a wing off the water. But so this crew, the crew of Spirit 03, was the first crew in American history to have what's called an allotment. And so most of the time in mass casualty like that, everyone's buried together in one grave or one stone with everybody's name on it. And
really?
Yeah. And so the families fought to have their own funerals. And, you know, as sad as it may be, you don't know what was in that casket. It was just an allotment. You got whatever the pieces were. 14 people got pieces. You know what I mean? We don't know what was there. So that was pretty incredible. It was a really tough time. You know, you have a lot of young widows.
Oh, my God.
My mom was 29 at the time, so young widow with a young kid. There were pregnant people.
Sure.
So there were people that never met their dads. There was a hero, who was just about to retire, literally. This was the last go-around. Had a son and a daughter and a spouse, and daughter was college age, son was high school, literally just about to get out, died. One guy that was really considering whether or not he wanted to do this job anymore, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And, of course, the brotherhood was strong.
Yeah.
And he ended up passing away, you know what I mean? All people of all different walks of life, all of a sudden, everything crashed together, and now you're like this one solid entity of people. You know what I mean? Like,
of course,
you're the one tragedy brings you together forever. Even though we're not like, you know, best friends or anything like that. That bond is still there, and we can always. It's like we never left each other when we're together.
Really?
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So you keep in touch with
people. In touch with people. Yeah. And then my dad's best friend, or I wouldn't say best friends, but battle buddies and squadron mates and all these guys that are now my friends, you know, and it's for me, it's a closeness to my dad, and I'm sure for them, it's a closeness to their friend.
Of course.
You know what I mean? And so some of the best people in my life were friends of my dad. In fact, my dad, another kind of deviating of the story, my dad, like I said before, my dad wasn't one of the first ones over there. And he had, one of the things is my dad took the place of one of his colleagues, the guy, one of my extremely close friends. It's almost like I'm a son to this guy. Mm-hmm. Well, his brand new baby daughter was going to have heart surgery. And so he came home, my dad went to cover for him, my dad died. So he had a lot of guilt over that.
I bet.
In fact, the daughter that had the heart surgery, she told me one time, she's like, hey, I really can't even be Facebook friends with you because it's too hard for me. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But that's kind of in a nutshell. My dad's buried at Pensacola Naval Air Station at Fort Barrancas. There's several guys that are buried there from the crew. There's a couple at Arlington, and there's a couple in hometown graves.
Wow. So they... Sorry, that one got me.
Yep.
All right, pull myself together a little bit.
one of the things that, you know, you try to learn... As you get older, you kind of know where your parents are coming from more because you're a parent.
Right.
And you can see things differently from a lens that you may not have been able to see going through it, right? I thought my dad was a jerk growing up because he wanted the best for me. And when you want the best for somebody, you push them to the max, right?
Of course.
So one of the things that, you know, I don't know if people do this now because we got a lot of technology, but back then, my dad was on TDY. For the last year of his life, he was doing a project in California at Lockheed for a new model aircraft. And he was gone pretty much 2 weeks, home for 2 weeks, gone for 2 weeks, like that.
Really?
And then he was deployed in all the recent major conflicts, Panama, Desert Storm, things like that. And so, you know, I'd always write him letters and things like that. And because my dad, like I mentioned before, and I think it's a good note there, is that my dad went to summer school every year, even though he didn't have to, which made him quite a perfectionist, right?
Of course.
And remember, this guy is a second-generation Mexican, a first American-born.
Right.
Taught himself all the important things, right? And first to graduate from high school, first to graduate from college, first to get a master's degree. And my dad wanted me to be smart and to be... pretty much perfect. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when I'd write him a letter, I guess I'm trying to get to this. I'd write him a letter. Of course, I'm going to have bad handwriting as a kid.
Yeah.
Misspelled words, things like that. Well,
that comma does not go there.
So my dad would get a red pen, mark it all up.
Like a teacher.
Yep, like a teacher, and send it back to me. Well, back then it hurt my feelings.
Sure.
But what he was trying to do is have excellence.
Yeah.
Because in his world, excellence meant you lived.
Absolutely.
Right? And if you didn't have excellence, something went wrong. You know what I mean?
It's real.
Yeah. So I can appreciate that now.
Yeah.
And looking back at it, I can appreciate it fondly of this guy wanted me so bad to not live the life that he grew up in of poverty, of need.
Struggle.
He wanted me to be the best version of myself,
of
right?
Of course.
So I can see that now.
Yeah.
My dad only lived 33 years, wow. You know, and I'm 44 now. And I always had this, you know, in my mind, I'm always like, man, I gotta live past how old my dad was. I had this fear of dying at early age, you know what I mean? But now, you know, I have one record. My dad was a guitar player. So my dad was kind of like the life of the party, right?
Okay.
And he taught himself how to play guitar. Anytime he went on TDY, he was the guitar guy playing the songs and all that.
Nice.
And so all the family functions, my mom has a big family. So all the family functions, he'd be playing the guitar. And I remember right the summer before he died. So he died in January. The summer before, my parents had gone on a cruise. But before that, like I told you, he was gone every couple of weeks in California. Well, it just so happened that I was visiting my grandma in California when my dad was coming over for TDY. So we were there at the same time, part of the summer for a couple of weeks. Well, got to see my dad a couple of days while he was there because, you know, off time or whatever. And he was at, they were having some sort of get together at a house, some party. And his uncle's name was Art too. And so it was his favorite uncle. You know, they both played guitar and I've got a video of them playing guitar, my grandma singing and all this stuff. So it's one of my favorite videos of all time.
Ugh.
You know, and
absolutely.
You kind of forget what your dad's voice sounds like as time goes on. And it's been now, it's a 91, so it's been about 33 years now. So, you know.
It's weird.
It's crazy, right?
It's really weird.
And so you kind of lose track of what that would sound like. And my dad did so many amazing things. My dad, he built me a fort in our backyard. Like, you knew a military guy did this because it was like to specs of the house.
It wasn't just a couple sticks and a...
It was a house with electricity.
Yeah.
That he built in the backyard for me as a fort.
Yeah.
It had...
Passed inspection.
It was covenants and all that. Painted the same color. It was a house.
Shingles,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, shingles. It had everything. And so my dad never did anything half-assed.
Sure.
He did a huge gazebo, probably like a 20 by 20 gazebo with lattice and all the stuff growing on there and the vines.
And
he did his own fence. I mean, my dad put a sprinkler system in the front yard. And back then, my dad used to say this, if I'm working, you're working. That was his phrase. If I'm working, you're working.
Well, it should be.
And I'm a fucking hard worker because of that.
Right.
I have my work ethic because of that.
Absolutely.
There were days my friends would come over. I'd be in the front yard. My dad was the son of a gardener. So I don't know if you guys remember these old weed picking things. It looked like a fork, like a screwdriver with a fork at the end of it.
I know what you're talking about.
You grab a weed and you pull it up underneath. Well,
yeah,
we did all
root.
That fucking shit by hand, right?
Yeah.
Get the fucking root.
Yeah.
And if I didn't get the root, I was in trouble.
It's just going to grow back.
Right. So my dad's got me out there in the fucking heat of the summer, you know, doing all this shit all day long. My friends come up. Can Jason play? My dad's like, he can when he's done with his work. If you want him to be done faster, get over here and get a screwdriver.
More hands equal less work. Get over here.
Yeah, my dad, you know, some cool things about my dad. I mean, he wanted me to be excellent.
Of
right?
course.
So, and at the time, of course, no kid likes this, but my dad, he wanted me to be the best I could be. So Saturday morning, man, he would print me out some math problems. I'm like a couple of sheets of math.
Really?
Problems, and I'd have to finish that before I could go outside. Then they were getting me highlight magazines. I don't know if you remember those.
Oh, yeah.
Well, most people are reading that shit for fun, right?
Yeah.
Well, my dad wanted me to read it for what? To do a book report on that shit.
Uh-huh.
But what it taught me was...
Not just the search and find. What was that thing
exactly.
called?
Exactly. You know? But what it taught me was, is that there's a time for everything and you got to work. You know what I mean? Work, you know.
Get your work done first and then play.
Yep.
In life, period.
In life, period.
Go to work and then you can go on vacation.
Exactly.
Go to work and then you can golf on Sunday.
So I'm a pretty tough customer nowadays with my work ethic and the kids that I've got. My kids know that I'm a tough guy. I'm very loving, but I have high expectations.
Yeah.
And my daughter, you know, just as a side note, my daughter's graduated high school at 16, has been working full time since she was 16.
Did she really?
Yeah. And she's one of the hardest working kids I know.
Did you find yourself doing stuff like your dad, academic wise?
Well,
for her,
you know what?
Or did
the,
she not?
You know
need
what?
Your
the,
fucking help?
Do you know what the difference was, man? Is that I never. It sounds horrible, and it's probably going to come across worse than it is. I really never cared about grades. I did care about grades, but I wasn't focused on the grades. I was focused on the behaviors.
I'm with you.
Like, do you have a good work ethic around this? Because sometimes a kid's going to be a C student.
Right.
And someone's going to be an A student.
Yeah.
But what kind of effort did you give me?
And are you respectful and stuff?
Yeah. If I got a note home from the teacher about disrespect, lying, cheating, whatever, you were in trouble for that. You could be a C student.
Ask my kids. Right? I'm with you.
I mean, what's most important to me is how did you treat the teacher and the other people?
Right.
You know, are you a distraction from their learning? Are you doing the best you can?
Right.
And some things the kid, she hates. She didn't like X, Y, Z subjects, and some things she was really, really good at.
Yeah.
As long, my thing is effort.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So some parents may not agree with that, but that's my kid never wanted to go to college anyway. She'd been telling me that since she was. I never directed her either way.
You don't fucking need it anymore.
You know what I mean? But hardest working kid I ever met.
That's awesome.
You know, and they, although I wasn't probably the best at, you know, I could have been better as a parent as them growing up. I was pretty hard on my kids.
Yeah.
Because that's what I knew. Not that it was right or wrong, but my kids know now, because I've instilled into them now, that their dad loves them and trying to do the best for them.
Of course.
And they respect that,
yeah.
You know? So I'm not a college graduate, which is interesting. My dad's fulfillment came from getting the degree, getting the education, because that no one else had that.
He's a first timer.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I went to college. I didn't finish. I'm in the banking business. I've been in the banking business for 20 years. I worked my way up from the very bottom. I don't recommend it because it took 20 years to get where I'm at now.
Long time, baby.
But, you know, now I'm an assistant vice president. I'm a bank officer. I'm well respected. I don't recommend going that route because it's the long, hard route. But that's what I knew.
Yeah, but
and that's my personality.
Absolutely.
You know?
It takes people like you. It takes people like all of us, right?
Mm-hmm. But what I can do is I can empathize with the regular guy. I can empathize, and I can put myself where they're at, give them good recommendations.
Yeah.
So I think my dad would be proud.
Of course.
Even though I'm not a college graduate. But one thing that I am disappointed with in my life is that, you know, I was very young, grew up military, so I lived all over creation, but I never learned Spanish. And, you know, one of the things my dad was afraid of was teaching me Spanish. Back then... 79. I was born in 79. In the early 80s, it wasn't cool.
No.
Right? And he wanted to give me the best shot possible.
Make you kind of blend in a little better.
Yep. And he was discriminated against. He was an officer in the military at this point. And we moved to Florida, like I said, in buying a house process. He was racially discriminated against, right?
Yeah.
And it was overt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my dad had to sue the builder because of the racial discrimination. My dad wasn't that kind of guy. He wasn't just trying to sue people. You know what I mean?
Well, he's not going
to
get stepped on either.
Right. And, I mean, this is an officer in the military.
Sure.
You know what I mean? With a master's degree.
What else do I have to do to prove to you, motherfucker?
Right.
You know?
And so, you know, that was kind of the thought process is, hey, man, blend into the, you know, to the society or whatever. But that's one regret that I have is that I don't speak fluent Spanish.
Yeah.
And, I'm very passionate about my Hispanic heritage.
Of course.
And, man, it's tough that I don't speak. I grew up around a lot of white people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the only one in my family on my dad's side that doesn't speak Spanish.
Right.
So, fluently. I can pick it up and read it a little bit and get by, but I'm not fluent. And it's annoying to me. But I'm sure that at that point, like I said before, my dad was just trying for me to be excellent, you know?
Well, yeah. And then, like you just said, dude, the times were different. Now, being bilingual and knowing all the...
Is all that...
And if you were white back then and bilingual, you were still a stud. But you're Mexican and you're not from here. All that bullshit was a way bigger thing back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, as parents, we want our kids... We want... For some reason, I don't want my kids to feel pain. And it's like, dude, that is... That pain, not physical or just like mental abusive pain, but like a little bit of suffering, struggle, those are the fucking things that teach, I think. To me, like, if I fuck something up and a drill instructor or whoever would, like, we got to go run this hill now, I'm not going to do that again.
You're not going to make that same mistake twice.
I won't do that again. I'm going to make some more mistakes.
A different mistake, but not that one.
I won't be doing that again. So right. It's like, we try to keep our kid, you know, and I can understand that. I'm just a regular white dude, but I can understand why a parent would like, but it's also fucked because people weren't able to express their culture stuff so openly back then.
Right.
You know, and that's our country's weird, fucked up, shitty history, but you weren't able to do that. So Jason, I don't want you running around speaking Spanish with all these fucking essays out here in California. Mm-hmm. You need a job someday, and the white man's going to be the one to hire you.
Yep.
Well, look who's on top. You're the motherfucker hiring him. You know what I mean? And so it's like, but I
and I'm guess what I'm searching for now? Every time I'm trying to hire somebody.
Speak Spanish?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's the biggest growing population in the United States.
There's no reason to be speaking French in right. the United States.
Exactly.
Speak Spanish. You're going to do fine.
So, I mean, it's, you know, so that's kind of my dad in a nutshell, but my dad was a lot more than that, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Of course.
A lot more than that. And my dad, anything he wanted to do, put his mind to, he did. Now, remember when I told you the military wouldn't let him be a pilot because of his eyesight. Mm-hmm. Well, what did that motherfucker do? Went out and got his private pilot's license to prove him.
I'll fly my own fucking plane.
I'll fly my own plane, right?
It doesn't have guns on it, but I'm going to fly it like
exactly. And so he was a private pilot.
Wow.
And then also he was a sailor. We had a Hobie Cat sailboat. And when we lived in Florida, and he also flew that sucker.
The word achiever comes to mind.
Yeah. He definitely never sat still.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think a lot of it had to do, and I feel this strongly, the vibe from him is that always trying to prove myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, it's kind of like when you mentioned earlier, you're looking for affirmation, right? Or looking for
validation. Yeah.
Sometimes we do that subconsciously. Like, my wife tells me all the time, why can't you just sit still?
Yeah. Isn't that good enough?
Yeah.
Like, no.
Like, hey. I'm always like, hey, I think I need to go do this. She's like, dude, you need to just sit down. That's why you have so much stress and anxiety, is you're always trying to do something.
Right.
Just be for a minute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just be present.
Present, yeah.
Because yeah. I'm always trying to, even if it's not consciously, I'm trying to prove my worth. My better husband because I did the grass for 4 hours, or did I do this project the right way? Did I, you know,
yeah.
what did I do for the family? You know what I mean? Or
yeah.
what did I, and it's, at the end of the day, man, men can run themselves completely ragged, and then you're no good.
Right. Now you got nothing to offer.
So I'm learning slowly. I mean, I'm very grateful for the work ethic that my dad instilled in me. I mean, to this day, I mean, I've had leaders in my life that tell me, hey, we're not necessarily promoting you for your mental agility.
Whatever.
So work ethic.
Yeah. I told you I didn't have the mental stuff, but what I can do is I'll just work until
I will go balls to the wall. I will be that person.
Yeah.
And it's hard work has trumped skill every time.
See, and I agree because I'm the first one to say, like, I know I'm not a stupid person. I know that's not correct. But where my brain works is like street stuff. And unfortunately, that's led me down some bad paths. But I read people and stuff like that. When we're talking about hundreds of thousands of an inch and things like that, I really have to work at those type of things.
Yep, me too.
But I'm that dude. I heard this on a podcast the other day. It was a comedian that said it. I've got a ditch digger's brain. You can hand me a shovel and I'll dig you the best hole you've ever seen in your life. But like, I when I get a thing and I know how to do it, I can focus and do it. But so it's reps for me. Reps. I got to do something over and over and over
yep.
until I just bang it in and I cannot forget it again because yep. I'm not just the quickest when it comes to stuff like that. But I wanted to say too, I struggle with that a lot. I always have, I think, but I don't think it's always negative to not be completely satisfied just because, and I think there's a weird thing when you go, I'm the best at this. That's just the way it is. I am the best at this thing. I personally, I don't think I could ever say that about something. Even if I was set, if you told me that, I would go, yeah, but I could still do this better. Yep. Right. So some of it is maybe negative and self-deprecating kind of thing that I do. But a lot of it is just because like I'm proud of that thing, but there's more I can do. I'm going to keep cruising and try to do better. Haven't you lifted weights enough? No. You know what I mean? It's my goal and what I think and all that stuff. So I am with you, dude, on the parenting. I'm trying. I've never expected straight A's. It's just that you guys have fucked up and brought me home straight A's. Now, I know as we grow up, school gets harder. One of them's got a little bit of a learning thing. It takes her some more effort.
Mm-hmm.
Savvy's very open to talk about it. We have made it that way. Like, you're not some weird person who's different than everybody. It just takes you a little bit fucking longer. I'm your dad. That's where you got it from. My bad. But, like, this is how we get down. It takes us a little bit longer. But sometimes I know that this C equals laziness and you fucked around and you were at your buddies or playing football and didn't get your stuff done.
Were you on your phone?
Right.
During study time?
Right. So I call that a lazy C because you just had an A.
Yep.
If you come to me and go, Dad, I'm just not picking this thing up. I'm going to go, Roger that. They're in sixth and seventh grade. They've already got me beat. I'm like, okay, so I definitely don't. I can't help you. I can Google.
I can't do it anymore either, man.
Fuck no.
I'm like, what kind of math is this shit?
Yeah, what does this mean? But they have A-plus tutors that I'll get you signed up for. I'll pick you up and take in. You know what I mean? We will get you the help. But Cash had Fs in art. And I'm like, dude, art and PE are the two gimmies. You take those things and make them A's because if you happen to be some kind of a C student, that'll just bump your average a little bit on the good side. You can't get anything but A's in art and PE, bro. He's like, I just hate art. I'm like, it's not even about the art, man. She wants to know that you're trying. A teacher can't say you're a bad artist. You get an F. That's not what it is. She's asking you to draw a fish. You do a circle with a tail and a big stupid eyeball. She knows you can do better. So you're letting yourself down. Last night we're at lacrosse practice, and this shit bothers me to no end, and it's probably why I shouldn't be at practice. But so there's two goals. I know zero about lacrosse. Right. All I know how to do is work hard. So I know zero about lacrosse.
I can give you a lesson. My daughter played lacrosse, man. So I love lacrosse. You're going to love it.
I like it, but I'm learning, right?
I had to learn too, man. It's amazing. I love the sport, man.
I think it's going to be – he loves it too. There's – two goals at either end of the field. The coach goes, all right, boys, what do they call it when they pick up balls? They call it a ball hunt, I think. So everybody go, you guys have been winging balls around this big stupid field all day. Go find the fucking balls. Nobody wants to do that. And then the one coach has got to go, hey, man, what did coach just say? And he's, you know, everybody wants to go get their bag and check their phone. Like you fucking sixth graders got something going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the coach says, so I'm noticing all that going on, and I'm one of those parents, like, with football and stuff. Like, hey, you guys need to be listening to coach. Get over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the head coach says, hey, three of you guys work together, grab each net, put it over there, blah, 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 and then I'll see you Thursday. Everybody goes taking off to their bag. Now, Cash is at the far end of the field still picking up balls, so he and one other dude are left to get both of the nets, or one of the nets, I think. So I see them struggling with it. Another coach went over and helped him, but I'm looking at all these other kids over there on their phone and talking about how gangster they are and how dope practice was and all this other bullshit. And when those two and the other coach came by, I said, now see, it's you guys' responsibility as teammates, players. It's all of your responsibility to keep those dudes. Now everybody don't just take off. Coach said, we got to get these, you know, and it's like,
put the slowest runner at the front of the pack.
Yeah. But it's just like, and, dude, I'm not out there running with him. I remember soccer practice. I remember baseball practice. You're a little tired. But as a parent, you see him standing there when it's like, hustle, you know? And so, I don't want to push him in a negative way. Again, it's just because I feel like he or the girls, whichever, whoever, have got more in them. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
I didn't know it until I was 18.
Hard part about for a parent is to articulate the way you want it to come out.
Right.
To make the right impact.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because you have a goal in mind, which is pay attention to what's going on around you, listen to instruction, and be part of the team. Be, you know, but and hustle, right? But yeah. how do we, when we get frustrated as parents, how do we portray that to our kids that is impactful the right way instead of negatively impacting them, right? So that's a struggle I have sometimes because yeah. I start to get upset when it's not going the way I think it should.
Right.
And then the way that I'm communicating, it doesn't come out the right way.
Yeah, yeah. And
because I'm a dumbass sometimes.
Yeah, I know. It's like, dude, my way doesn't work. On some things, it works really well. But on some things, it's like, I should have come at that. So I'll come, Alicia, can you maybe talk to her? Because I don't know how to talk to a 13-year-old girl. I only know how to talk like I know how to talk. But I didn't know any of this stuff. I've never climbed a rope before. I got to boot camp. They show you this way to twist your foot around this rope to where you basically have a step. And now you're not using your arms. You use your legs to climb a rope. You don't fucking do pull-ups.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It's a trick. You basically make like an S and put one foot on top of the rope. And you're just
standing. You're laddering it the whole way up.
You're just standing on it. You can almost let go, except it's a rope so you would fall. But like your arms should not be smoked when you get done climbing a rope. Zero clue. I watch a drill instructor do it once, and I'm like, okay, I have no options as far as do I want to do this or do I not. He showed me how to do it. I paid attention to how to do it. I climbed up this rope really fast, and I was like, holy shit. Never ran 3 miles. You know, I was a physical dude, but never three in a row. So my issue there, and this has come up lately with this Tough Mudder thing, I've been asking a bunch of people, do they want to do it? I got invited to do it with a bunch of dudes I don't know, but I needed to challenge myself. I wanted to do something a little bit different and have some fun. Fuck it. And so when I've been asking people, whatever the reasons are, I think most people, you know, they don't want to fail. But the reason why that bothers me is because most people have very little idea of what they're actually capable of. And it's like, oh, how the fuck you work out every day and all this. It's like, dude, you could do all of this too. You just don't know it yet. And, you know, that box or that door has never really been open for you to kind of explore. And it's like, and then with the kids, like, you guys can do like almost anything you want to do.
That's why I loved wrestling so much, man. I grew up, I didn't grow up in high school. I started wrestling in high school, my freshman year of high school. And I went to, a 28-day wrestling camp in Minnesota at the University of Minnesota's J. Robinson intensive wrestling camp. And I had never wrestled before. So I did it before I ever wrestled.
Oh,
so
wow.
I had never done it before. Okay?
Yeah.
And this was like, it's like what you just said, basically it was going to boot camp without never doing it before, right? And when intense is a very mild word for it. I mean, we ran a 15-mile marathon in this 28 days. We wrestled 3 times a day. We ran, it was basically boot camp for wrestling, right? And so I'm a fat kid, you know, with no experience in this type of stuff. But what it taught me and what I've held on to this day of my life, and I coached wrestling for a really long time, like you said, the mind can go as far. I mean, the body can go as far as the mind will let it.
It's ridiculous.
So it's the mental toughness. And what I've gained from it practically, and I didn't mean to steal your thunder here, but what I've gained from it practically is, like, for example, just a very practical example is like yesterday, man, or this morning, and I don't really want to fucking get up and go to work. I am just fucking tired. And I have to coach myself and say, get the fuck up, get dressed, and go to fucking work.
Yep.
That's all internal. That's mental toughness.
Of course.
And that's just a very practical example.
Right. Everyday stuff.
Right. And so those kind of things make you go further in your life and do the things that are hard, right?
Yeah.
But I never knew I could run a 15-mile marathon.
No.
Right? But after knowing that I could do it, I ran cross-country in high school every year to get ready for wrestling.
Exactly. You have to open up that potential.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you don't think you can if you never have.
Right.
But once you start to explore those things, it's... So I talk about parenting on here a lot. My kids are on here a lot. And I mean, I know that
that's the toughest job ever, man.
I know.
That's tougher than my regular job.
I know. I know we're all just trying to figure it out, but I like
taking something you've never had experience in, right? Anybody who's a parent. Before you're a parent, you've never done it before.
No.
And you're raising a human being.
Yeah. You're responsible.
With no experience.
Right. if my paint job doesn't turn out great, big fucking deal.
Right.
But this kid's, you know.
Exactly.
My mom always said, when you leave this house, you're a direct reflection of me.
I always tell my kids, remember who you represent.
Right, right.
You represent yourself, God, and your family.
It's a big deal, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna talk for a little while, for a few minutes. First of all, thank you so much. To you guys listening, I have never heard the story about your dad. That, like, I knew little about bits and pieces. I didn't get the vibe that you really wanted to go into the detail like that. And that's not a knock on or anything, because I completely understand that. But so I never pushed for it, because that's one of those things that has to just happen. It just is going to happen naturally. So it means a lot to me that you told the story on here, man. I hope you understand that.
I appreciate you asking.
And then the hard part about that whole thing is, again, knowing people like your dad. Right. Okay. So I'm imagining, I don't know any of the fucking monsters on that plane, just the badass motherfuckers on this plane. And I say that with the most respect in the world. I don't know anyone on that plane, but I imagine it had to have been somewhat of a team decision. Somebody's flying that plane and I'm going to take this plane wherever I have to go. But I can imagine knowing what I know about a small unit, meaning just the people on that aircraft, they made a decision that day that put them in, unfortunately, it turned out to be mortal fucking danger. But without people like that, where would we be? I mean, especially America, you know, because these stories, while not to wash over any of them, there are so many of these people, like, that jumping on a grenade for your buddies. You know what I mean? But it's like, at the time, they weren't even thinking. That to me is the most beautiful thing about the small team environment, about that camaraderie and about the fighting. And no one ever wins at war. It's always a motherfucker, and it sucks. And it's
only the dead have sent the end of war.
Right. We wish it never had to happen again. If it could, you know, of course I'd press that button. But without those, like, decisions being made, and without those type of people, you know, so, and then the thing that really obviously hits home to me is, and when you were telling it choked me up, because while I don't think I've ever been in a situation probably like those Marines were in when they were pinned down, I would say I've never been pinned down when I was over there. Hearing air support, or knowing that it's coming, or any kind of support, it's like, it's the best feeling in the world. You know, like, they're coming. All we got to do is hang in here for a couple more minutes, but people know there's something bad happening. If you call an ambulance and you start to hear the sirens, it's like that, fuck, somebody's here, you know? So for those folks to have come together and make that decision, like, we are not going to leave these kids, because let's face it, that's who's down on the ground down there, is fucking kids like I was. We're not bailing, even though the sun's coming up. We are fucked here in about, I don't know, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, whatever the time frame is. We are low on fuel. Everybody else left. Everybody else did what their order said to do. We didn't. We did what the right thing was to do. Fuck.
Yeah.
For those kids. And that's just like, it's so powerful and so meaningful. And
it takes the entire team too, because one guy says no.
Absolutely.
They're going back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. I didn't know that to be a fact on an aircraft per se, but you know, that's a real life war hero. I'm fortunate enough, Gomez and some of these other guys, to know them, and they're still alive after have been through things. And, it's just a real honor to know you. And, however you may feel, your dad, you know, he left a pretty good impact on you because you're a really good dude, man.
Yeah, he's an amazing, amazing guy. And, you know, the thing that I think about long term that I'm sad about most is that, you know, I didn't have any boys.
Yeah.
And so the name is gone with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want the story from, I guess I want the story from my dad to be out there so that he's never forgotten.
Of course.
You know, and what if this guy never gets on the belly of a train and comes to the United States?
Right.
What if these Marines, I mean, it's a whole story, right?
Yeah. And your grandpa getting on the belly of that train while it's not taking fire from a surface to air missile is still fucking gnarly. I mean, who, I don't.
The love of being here so bad that you get on the belly of a train and say, I want to go do something for my life.
Right.
And then your firstborn son.
Yeah. I want to create this legacy. And, you know, and he didn't know any of this, of course, was going to happen, but it's just like, I got to fucking do something,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it bums me out that I don't have that thing with my dad. The men in my family, from what I know, a lot of alcoholic, abusive stuff generations. So while it bums me out that I never had that, I don't have a positive male role model. I mean, I had friends' dads that were my positive male role models. They gave me a blueprint on marriage and parenting and all this other stuff, which I'm so grateful for because they're, you know, I still think about these guys all the time. But I didn't have that. So, yes, that's a bummer. But what my dad, the best gift he ever gave me was trying to understand, and I'm still working on it, but understanding what not to do and staying in the fight and the hard work, right? No, this isn't fucking easy. You know what I mean? Life and kids and practice and fucking the bills and the paying for this, you know how much lacrosse cost to play? It's ridiculous. And cheer, fuck cheer, and all this other stuff. But it's like, he fucking bailed. He bailed to go find something easier. Couldn't find it 6 fucking times he was married. He bailed. And the way I see it, like, because I know what that feels like and it still impacts me to this day, like the one thing that I won't do while I fuck up schoolwork and I yell and all these other things that I don't do well as a father, I won't quit and I won't leave. And that work ethic that your dad had and instilled in you and somebody along the way instilled it in me, it's just, I'm not going to quit. I won't quit. I'm going to be a dead motherfucker before I quit this job because I know I never wanted anything from my dad. I just wanted to talk to him. And that was just too fucking much to ask, apparently. And like, that's the worst feeling as a boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was like an outlaw motorcycle iron worker, fucking cool, like on paper, you know, he's a fucking outlaw. That's fucking cool growing up to be an outlaw, you know?
Absolutely.
And, I started to go down that road and like, okay, stop, you know, you need to break this cycle. So that was the best thing he ever did for me was give me the knowledge or at least the idea that this is not good. So through all my addiction and shit, that was always in the back of my head was you're becoming exactly what you hate or what you don't have or both, whichever one it is. But, so I, that was just always a real bummer, but to hear about fathers like yours, I, you know, it is tough growing up that way, I'm sure, but I think looking back, like kids with parents like that, Alicia's dad was very tough on her. She's had 2 jobs her whole adult life. She does nothing but work, take care of all of her parents, all of her kids, my fucking ass, and everybody else around her. That's what she does in life is take care of people. And without him, who knows, you know, who knows? So.
Yeah, the greatest gift our parents have given us is life.
Yeah.
Now what we do with that is up to us, right?
Don't fuck it up.
Don't fuck it up. But is like you mentioned, man, well, the thing I'm most proud of, someone asked me, what are you most proud of? Is I do not quit.
Yeah.
I don't quit anything.
Yeah.
And that's how hard it gets, I don't quit.
Yeah. And that might be simple to say, but it's a hell of an attribute, right? Because if a straight A guy with all these paperwork that says how good he was at Harvard and all this stuff, that's great. I want the dude that's willing to get dirty and do shit that no one else wants to do. That to me means more than anything.
Absolutely, man.
I told a story on, I made a little video and I kind of skipped over this, but when I got my job at the Lock and Dam, there were some guys that just on appearance voted against me. They told my boss, like, no, we'll hire somebody else. Somebody else will come along, this fucking tattooed guy, you know, he's probably up to no good and shit. They're now friends of mine. They've now apologized, but earning that and them knowing that they made a bad judgment call right off the bat is, and now we're buddies and shit. It's huge because it, since then we have hired guys that my boss will ask me, hey, what do you think about so-and-so? I'm like, I think he's going to do good. I mean, he seems like he's catching on to me. And then the fucking dude's not with us anymore. You know, not, he's alive. He's not at the Lock and Dam anymore. So, that no quit attitude, I think is, that's a pretty big key to have in life. So
I always tell anybody that I hire, and I've hired many people in my life.
Yeah.
I judge two things, will and skill.
Yeah.
I can teach skill. I can't teach will.
Right.
I will take anybody with the will to do it, and I will teach you the skill.
Yeah.
Because I know you're going to want to learn.
If you're
going to, and you're going to shut up and you're going to pay attention and you're going to,
right,
you're going to follow the program and you're going to get good at this because you want to, not because you think you have to, right? Or whatever.
Yeah.
But someone that is a pompous ass who has the skill, but they're lazy and they think they're the shit and they don't do anything because they don't, that's below them. I don't want them on my team.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. A lot of people don't think they can do boot camp because they're not strong enough. It's like, hey, listen, strength, they're going to give you for free. Don't worry about that.
I like that one. That's a good one.
Don't
man.
Worry about that, man. The Marine Corps, the Army, the Air Force, anybody, they're going to give you all that. That comes with the package. That you just, that's a gimme. That's in the swag bag right when you walk in the door. We're going to handle that. Do you have the rest of it?
Right.
That's what really counts more than anything. If you can just stick with it and keep doing it, you'll be all right. Well, thank you so much for coming by, man. I really do appreciate it. If for any reason you guys want to, I mean, the story Jason just told us is going to be better than anything you could read, but you could go to the
Mid-America Veterans Museum.
Sorry, it's a new name for me too. I'm trying to get used to it. The Mid-America Veterans Museum. You can Google that or go to their Facebook page and you can read Jason's dad's stories. Probably see some photos, right?
Yep, it's Captain Arthur Galvan,
okay.
Galvan, yep.
Also, our other podcast, the Dog Tag Podcast, you can find links to that on the Facebook page. You can find that on YouTube. It's called the Dog Tag Podcast. We're probably going to have to come up with the new watermark for it.
Yep.
We're going to fucking video at some point anyways. But
well, let's just go ahead and do video, man.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm going to learn it and then I'll just transfer all my knowledge over to there. And
the cool thing is on video, you'll be able to get a background of the museum.
Absolutely.
We could do it in different spots of the museum.
I think a great idea would be to go around and read all or as many of those stories as we can, set up our operation, our little studio in front of that, and then get some really good footage and, you know, do a bunch of, we could do tons of stuff.
You know, from the beginning of time, human beings have been storytellers.
It's the best.
They've passed down all information by story. Then it became written, right?
Yeah.
The museum, just for those listening, it really is about preserving history through storytelling.
Yep.
And it's sometimes from the family member's voice, sometimes from the person, the veteran themselves. But man, at any rate, these are human stories. These are patriotic stories, and there are stories.
Yeah, real artifacts, really good artifacts. I know that sounds like a weird way to say it, but it's history, and it's, there's some really, really cool things to look at. So. Check us out on there. Again, thank you guys so much for tuning in as always. And like, if you could please check out the YouTube page, and I'm going to be coming out with some more stuff and you'll meet Jason on there soon. I'll get some video. Friday night is the anniversary of the museum. So he and I are both going up there. I won't have anything out, but I'm going to try to get some footage up there. Anyway, you guys be cool. Take care of yourselves. Do something nice for someone and keep up the hard work. Thanks, Jay. We'll see you later, buddy.